Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good friend, Kyle Schoenewill. Kyle, welcome back.
Lots to update people on.
Oh, man.
I'm curious. First of all, my wife is a beautiful person, and she's a physical therapist, and she's fixed my neck. So as an update to my health,
wow. My
neck is feeling better. It's just my posture, especially when I play Warzone video games. I sit so slouch that it kills me. So for all those people out there, find a PT to marry and get your neck fixed. So
I really need to do that. We had some folks reach out in the Slack, sort of pushing towards that. And I think I might try to book a PT
you
session.
Need it. Your body's kind of falling apart.
Man, yeah. Also, the neck issues. I need to talk to Annika and get some tips there. But I'm glad. I'm glad you're back up to full health.
The second thing I wanted to update people on is just a quick check-in on my rewatch. I am now through our favorite movie, Thor: The Dark World. And
so you're just going to stop, right?
I'm just quitting right there. So it's been a great journey. I got to see Thor kiss Jane Foster on her porch, and that's where the whole MCU ends, and I'm happy.
Wow.
So good to go.
Really makes sense. I mean, so much payoff.
So much payoff. It's so earned. That moment is so earned. What other keywords can we work in that we always use? It was just so interesting. But
chills.
Yeah, chills. Absolutely. Let's go. The thing I wanted to say, a couple Avengers thoughts. Can we get into this for a second?
Yeah, let's do it.
Holy cow. The first Avengers is still a really, really good movie, dude. Do you realize that? Like, it takes a rewatch and it takes some time getting away from it.
Uh-huh.
Let me say this. I think the first Avengers movie is my most watched film ever probably, but especially in the MCU, just by chance, because it's been out for a while and because it's so easy to have on. Like when it was on TV, I would stop and have it on. And I don't rewatch these movies to the length you do, but I've probably seen that movie 25 times. And so it's crazy to me that on my 26th viewing, I can be sitting there and the movie still demands me putting my phone away, my computer away. I still get chills. I still say to my wife, like, that is still so cool. Like, the last battle is so cool. Like, when Tony's realizing he can be a team player and it gives you that shot where they're tracing, it's a kind of like a one shot where it's tracing everything each Avenger's doing. So the camera pans up to Hawkeye. He shoots the arrow and then it follows that. And you see Hulk and you see Thor and then Tony. It's just like, it's still so cool. The circle up scene is still unbelievable. And then the biggest thing for me is the outro of that movie with Nick Fury doing his epic dialogue to the council and to Maria Hill. And then you get the massive Avengers theme. It's panning out. It's zooming out. And you're left with Tony and Pepper and just an A on the tower for Avengers. And it's like, I remember walking out of the theater And that is when I was fully hooked on the MCU. Because I had never read a comic book, I didn't really watch the shows like you did. I liked Iron Man, and I thought that was really cool. But I didn't even like rush to go check out the other stuff. Then when the Avengers came out, I still hadn't even seen Captain America or Thor. Because I was kind of half-hearted. It was the Avengers movie that when I walked out, I was like, I need to look more into this stuff. Then I went back and watched Thor. Then I went back and watched Captain America. But it was that movie that got me in.
Same for me, honestly. I mean, I grew up watching a ton of Spider-Man stuff, a little bit of X-Men, which, you know, is pretty reflective of Marvel's general approach in the 90s and early 2000s. I mean, that's why those films are the ones that were released. That's why those are the characters that Marvel was able to sell. I mean, we've talked about this before, but it's just crazy that, you read back, and I'm sure some of this will come out in this upcoming History of the MCU book. But I mean, some of the packages that Marvel was trying to put together to sell off these rights, like if you had a time machine, any studio would have been so rich.
It's like, lottery.
they were selling it for like dirt cheap, like basically the entire Avengers catalog, and studios just turned them down. They were like, no, we're not interested. Just give us Spider-Man or X-Men or even Daredevil, you know, like, and just in terms of the characters that actually had real appeal and the characters that people thought would ever translate. And so it is like, whenever I went to Avengers, I didn't know if I would really care, because the only character to that point, ironically, that I cared about at all was Iron Man. And the character I probably cared about least was Captain America. And so it is, I mean, it's super impressive. However, I do have to, well, a couple things I want to say there. One, you and I talked about this. Let's talk about Captain America and the Avengers movie just very briefly.
Okay. I need to jump in here. Because I recently went back and listened to some of our old podcasts, including our first breakdown of the Avengers. And I need to apologize to you, because you brought up how ridiculous Captain America's suit looks just in the first Avengers movie. And I made fun of you on the episode. I was like, Robbie, that's so dumb. And you're like, no, but it does play into how you view him as a character. And it's hard to have cool moments when he looks that ridiculous. And I was like, Robbie, that's so dumb. You're so nerdy. And dude, oh my gosh, you were right. He looks so stupid, and therefore none of his moves look cool. Like when he's like over here and up there, it's like so cheesy looking. And I think you and I, through talking on the phone, put our finger on it's mainly the helmet that's so bad. When he finally loses the helmet halfway through the movie, it improves drastically.
Yeah. Well, it's the lack of ears showing. I don't know why that matters, but it very much matters. Every other Cap costume he wears, including the one from the first Avenger, which was filmed, pretty sure, roughly simultaneously with the Avengers. So you know Chris Evans had to be aware of just how much dumber he looked in costume in the Avengers movie.
Such a bummer they didn't just use that one.
I know. It's so strange, because the whole thing is, we should go old fashioned, but it's like, no, you don't. You didn't, though. You didn't use the actual old fashioned look. And I do appreciate that the MCU recognizes that. And that's where the Endgame jokes come from. And I feel like the fact that Coulson designs it adds a little bit of okay, well, you know, it's a little bit more endearing, because you can blame it on Coulson being kind of a nerd and not being able to design a cool costume.
It's also a little bit too shiny. It's almost plasticky looking. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, and the whole like hood thing, did you notice that? Like, he has the hood that he puts on under the helmet. Okay. So it like hangs off the back when he's not wearing it.
In a similar vein, I've recently watched Thor: The Dark World. And at this point, I know we joke about it. I'm going to die on this hill. That movie is such a jump up in quality from the first Thor. It's unbelievable. I think people see them as the same, or they'll trash Thor: The Dark World as the worst movie. And yes, every joke we've ever made about it makes so much sense. Like, the plot is ridiculous. I laughed out loud, Robbie, with my wife, with the line you said, which is Heimdall saying, few can sense it, even fewer can see it. And it's like, wait, what? Everyone is seeing it just right there in the open. It's very visible. Just the strangest
it's like a cataclysmic universal event.
And so there's those really funny bits that we have rightfully made fun of. But the movie on the whole looks better, sounds better, the music's better, the acting is better, the dialogue is better, Thor looks way better, he's not bleached brows. Like, every other aspect other than the ridiculousness of the end of the plot is better. It just is.
I want to say on the Thor front, so I should say, you've been going through the rewatch, the actual kind of full Friends from Work rewatch.
I've done Cap 1, Captain Marvel, Iron Man, The Incredible Hulk, Thor, The Avengers, Thor Dark World.
Oh, you watched The Incredible Hulk?
Okay, I'm not going to lie to you. I skipped it, but I just lied right there to our audience. I was going to lie. I didn't think you were going to call me on it. And I just lied about that. I've watched every other one.
I just couldn't imagine Kyle sitting down to watch The Incredible Hulk.
Here's what happened. I went to go sit down and I said, if it's on Disney Plus, Annika, we'll watch it. Otherwise, we'll skip it. It's not on Disney Plus. So
yeah, it's not.
That is the truth. I'm sorry. I don't lie to our audience, but I did lie right there.
So I sort of forecasted this a couple episodes ago, but one thing that I have been wanting to try, and I have a little bit of space right now, was this kind of character-specific rewatch. And I've done something to that effect with Cap before, kind of unsurprisingly, but I had always thought that it would work particularly well with Iron Man. And so I'm actually probably at a pretty similar spot to you. I'll probably finish a lot sooner because I don't have a ton of movies left. But I started with Iron Man, watched Iron Man 2, The Avengers, Iron Man 3, and I'm now on Age of Ultron. And I would recommend this, especially for you, but I think for anyone that's listening that's just looking for kind of a new way to experience this, it's such a, I mean, I'm not saying anything at all surprising when I say that the Infinity Saga is very much centered around Tony Stark, but seeing it all from his perspective, like the storyline that you and I have discussed in terms of the kind of mission he starts in Iron Man, the guilt he's feeling, like some of the conversations he has with Pepper about needing to kind of change course and needing to live for something that's bigger than himself, and then seeing all of that kind of weave through even just the first Avengers movie, and then Iron Man 3, it just works really, really well. And even, I mean, even Age of Ultron is so Tony-centric. I mean, because none of what happens in that movie would happen if Tony hadn't created Ultron. So
Don't phrase it like that.
But so I've been watching it mostly through that lens, and I love it. If anyone else wants to do that, we can go on the Slack and talk about it. I think there are a lot of things I've noticed that I'll probably come back and discuss more after I finish. But something that's not Tony related, that's just, to your point about how good The Avengers is, I was so struck this time by how good Tom Hiddleston is in that movie. Like, he is mesmerizing to watch. Like, I think he brought so much gravitas to that role, and I really don't think you can overstate how important he was to the success of that movie. Like, he's such a good kind of classic villain. Like, it's not like a Heath Ledger, like, game changer villain in that way. It's a good, like let's team up to fight the like evil bad guy villain. He's like dripping with the kind of, like, everything's sardonic. It's just, it works so well. I think it's Pete Hiddleston in a lot of ways.
It does. I need to come back to that in a second because it's going to lead into an incredible discussion in 1 second. Okay, so just hold that thought for just a millisecond. Okay. In some ways, watching Thor and Thor the Dark World, what hits me is that this is kind of the loosest the MCU gets. And it's so strange to me because Kevin Feige has been on top of so many details, but there's just all these little calls in those two movies that I just don't know why they would make them. Like, why include that line that Heimdall says, right? That it's hard to see. And right. why include the, I joke about this with my wife, like, if you destroy the bridge, you'll never see her again. Only to have the bridge repaired in 2 seconds. Like nothing happened with the bridge.
Right.
They're right away back. I don't understand the call of having Loki take over Odin at the end there. After he dies and you see him get all pale-faced and dead again, he somehow tricks you again and he's alive, which I don't understand the magic limitations, right? So that's kind of weird. Uh-huh. Then he comes back and ruins that moment from Odin. I can't understand why they would do that. There's also little things like, why do the bleach brows and then change it right away? I don't understand. Right. I don't understand why they introduced the ether as the stone and then later had to fix that. Because they literally in the introduction say, while all the other stones are gems, this one is different.
Right.
But then later it's just a stone again. Like, why did they let the MCU get so loose on so many tiny details in these two movies? I can't figure that out.
I think what's interesting, yeah, you're I mean, even just within Thor 2, and I think I've been reading some previews from that book I already referenced, and it is interesting hearing some of the behind-the-scenes stuff on that movie. Like, for as bad of a reputation as it has, relatively speaking, again, way better than the average movie in terms of the money it made and even the critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. But it's funny because apparently they did a ton of kind of reworking and reshoots and trying to sort of stitch some things together. I think even Marcus and McFeely came in as in some ways to either salvage or resalvage the parts of the project. So I get the sense that whatever the original version of this was that they had worked up with Alan Taylor, I think part of the reason Alan Taylor was so upset ultimately is because the movie that we got was not his vision. Now, I think Feige and co maintain, yeah, we know this movie isn't good, but it's way better than what you would have gotten. And I'm sure Alan Taylor would maintain, no, the movie that I had would have been a lot better than the kind of mess that showed up. But I think regardless, you start to feel that there were maybe too many cooks in the kitchen because not everything seems to be pointing in the same direction. And I even wonder if that's why, like, that Heimdall line is just so clearly incongruent.
Incorrect.
With the finale that we get, you know? But also, like, we said this, I think, or something to this effect in our original Thor Dark World episode, but I just don't understand. I'm totally for the feeling of sort of foreboding you get by knowing that Loki is now on the throne at the end. And I even like how long we had between Thor the Dark World and Ragnarok, because you just had this sense that, okay, Thor hasn't been paying attention to Asgard, and we know that Loki's on the throne, and we know that there's going to be some kind of reckoning. But I just don't, to your point, understand why Odin and Thor couldn't have a conversation. And then after that, in like a post-credit scene, you see Loki take over, or you see some indication that post that moment, Loki is now on the throne. Like, I think that you could do both, and I don't think you would lose much.
When you go back and rewatch and you've had some time off, you really notice some things that we have brought up in the past, but they've been made really apparent to me. The MCU does have a really hard time letting characters go, and that bothers me. When you go back and start rewatching, you notice that, like, even the characters they wanted to let go, like Loki, right? He comes back time and time again, even to the new show that came out this year.
Right.
Coulson is one of the only people I can remember they let go, but they even kind of tried to do it by putting him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now that became not canon, right? But even in that show, they were like, well, here's how he actually didn't die.
Well,
here's the thing, dude, I could add to the list, dude. I think to myself, who did they let go? They let go of Pietro, but then they kind of teased in WandaVision that, no, there's a way that he can come back a little bit.
Right.
It's not the same guy, but it's like Vision, like who is actually gone? Even Thor's mom, you go back and get flashbacks with.
Right.
Like, who can they let go? That's scary to me because I understand that they want to make money and tell cool stories. Like, there's probably so many cool comic Pietro stories that they can't now tell. I get that. But It just, you have to let some people go for the story to be bettered. You have to.
I mean, I would hope, obviously we've talked about Tony and Steve. I would hope Odin as well, you know, post Ragnarok. I think that would be a disappointing one to undo.
Yeah. Like if he's in Thor 4, although at this point, I'm not putting it past him that there's some way he's actually around.
Well, or I mean, the multiversal stuff, which, I'll give them a break. That's not technically bringing them back as long as they don't come into the main timeline.
Right. But you know what I'm saying? They still are trying to find more ways to tell more stories. That's the whole point of it.
I think an interesting, since you brought up Coulson, I read something not that long ago that's sort of on point here by Joss Whedon, where he talked about how, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was very much a kind of Whedon propelled project. Like and you can tell if you've ever seen like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the kind of stuff that Joss Whedon has worked on outside of the MCU, it feels very much in line with that, at least the early stuff. And he said, I think after several seasons, that he actually regretted not making the show, but undoing Coulson's death within that show, because he recognized with hindsight that it really undid a major emotional moment in the Avengers movie. And that is supposed to be kind of the key moment.
Which is the biggest reason why I haven't watched that show. Because I don't want to live in a world where that moment is undone.
No, and I'm kind of with you. And that's why I think I've watched all but the last season or two of the show. And I know at times they even flirted within that show of kind of undoing the undoing. But I think that's one that whatever you think about it quality-wise, it's probably wise for them to have made non-canon. I think the Netflix shows, which some people I think probably think less of quality-wise, I think are a lot safer bet to bring in to be canon, because it just doesn't really impact anything that's happened in the Infinity Saga, because it's all kind of relatively contained. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're so right. I mean, like if you start doing that, if you start undoing any of these moments, then you're left with a lot being hollowed out.
I think what's a little bit unfortunate for me, and this is maybe me making a leap, but I feel like in the case of Loki and Vision, I think what happened was they had on paper that they were going to go away. Somebody did. And then they were so widely popular with fans that as a reactionary decision, they were like, well, we should keep telling more stories. Like they literally even said that's what they did with Loki in the show.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's
not to say that they can't ever tell good stories, because as we saw in Loki, the show is fantastic to watch. But that feels so like Star Wars-y. You know, like reactionary of, okay, oh, those guys are popular. I guess what I'm asking for is it would have taken Kevin Feige sitting down with everybody for like the next 10 years and saying, here's the characters that we need to sign on for multi-year contracts and convince them this is your career. Here's the list, right? But here's the list of characters that I want the actor to kill their part, but they're going to go away in one movie and we're never going to tell the story of them from the comics. Mm-hmm. And that's going to hurt some comics fans, but for the greater good of the MCU, the actual movies, here's the list of people that we're not touching again, right? So whoever we cast for this, tell them to put their all into it, but they only get one movie. Do you know what I'm saying? Right, and then they would have to like stick to that.
Well, but I don't even know if it's a comics fan thing. I think it's more of an MCU fan thing.
Well, I'm saying somebody out there is like a diehard fan of Pietro in the comics or Quicksilver, and they're so bummed that they didn't really get to see a fully fleshed out Quicksilver in video form.
Well, I mean, yeah, they did technically in the X-Men series, but I guess my one of the interesting things about kind of Twitter culture and what I end up seeing just by virtue of us kind of being a part of that world is like every character has a stan. Like it doesn't matter which character you're talking about.
That's
like
true.
It doesn't matter how minor they are. Like Darcy, yep, there are Darcy stans out there. Like, do we want to talk about like, I don't know, like Volstagg, yeah, he's got some stance out there. Like
Volstagg stance? Okay, wow.
It's like there is someone out there. Like we're in such an interesting moment culturally where I feel like people are digging at the bottom of the barrel of things and being like, this is underrated. And it's like everything can't be underrated, guys. Like some things have to be rated.
Correctly. We talked about that before, that you make such a big case for something being underrated that it eventually, by nature, becomes overrated because right, we're talking right. about how underrated it is so much.
Like, it's like you, like right now, I think, leading into No Way Home, and we're going to talk about a lot of this, so if this piques your interest, stick around, not today, but in the coming months. But, like, right now, I feel like there's a big push towards, like, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man 3 being underrated, and I'm like, guys, they're not. They're not underrated. They're correctly rated.
Well, maybe next time you'll estimate me, Jan. Michael Scott quote for those people out there.
No, but I'm with you. I think that I bet you're right. I think that there's just always going to be someone that wants more, you know?
It's just kind of a bummer because I think if you went through and made a list, and maybe I'll do this. Like, who is actually gone? I'll have to go think about that. I think I do think that Yondu is gone, I think.
Yeah,
but then
although,
you know, you get to see multiverse stuff and What If, but I'm saying the Yondu we know I think is out.
I've seen interviews, and this doesn't mean anything, but I've seen Michael Rooker say he would love to find a way to return as Yondu.
What does that mean? Why? I mean, right. I can't. It undoes like one of the coolest moments in a phase two film if he comes back. I just don't.
Yeah, I think it's so
the
strange.
Curse of this nature of storytelling. That I mean, I've told you this on this podcast before. It's what happened with Sherlock Holmes, right? This nature is what I don't like actually about TV series, right? I need some finality to things.
Well, end of the fandom, I think, because I think there's something sort of intoxicating, I would imagine, about being a part of this, about inhabiting a character that people care so deeply about and let to be kind of a part of their lives, that I think being on the outside, even if you can rest knowing, like if you're Yondu, you have a very clean, very nice arc, and you're part of, you know, one of the more successful franchises within the MCU, and you can look back knowing that you contributed in a pretty meaningful way to that. But I'm sure there's another part of him that's like, yeah, but I kind of miss playing around in that world.
Oh.
You know?
100%. I said the people that would be really bummed about this would be the fans that are, you know, massive Yondu fans. But absolutely, the actor himself, it's a bummer for them. Because I'm sure there's some people that were super pumped to get to the MCU. You know, right. They finally get there and they die in the first movie, and that's probably a bummer, you know? I know that, I know for a fact, like Nebula, okay, Karen Gillan is all in. And right. if her story ever comes to an end, I think she would be bummed that she doesn't get to play Nebula anymore.
Well,
so absolutely, think, that's a thing.
I think maybe the greatest example of that, which maybe leads into our next discussion, is Tom Hiddleston.
Yes. Okay. That was what I also wanted to bring up. You and I have both recently watched The Avengers.
Right.
Big sigh. I just, you can't tell me now. I am guarding my heart here, guarding my words.
I can hear everyone's knives
sharpening. I know. Exactly. Exactly. I feel like you and I are educated on the MCU, right? Like we, you can trust that we're putting in our effort. I mean, we are putting in the work.
Put
we
in the
go
hours,
back and
sure.
watch these things. We study it. We talk about it. We interact with Disney. We interview the people from the movie sets. I'm trying to be as into this world as possible. And you just can't tell me that the Loki we get in the first episode of the show is the same Loki from the Avengers. I understand everything everyone's sharpening their knives about. I understand that, yes, he still watches the video of his mom dying and all that stuff and that he's different. And I get all that. And I get that this is Loki's chance to change. But it's just too stark of a contrast from what you see in Avengers. Go watch the Avengers right now and watch Loki. I mean, he doesn't make a joke in the movie, essentially. And not only does he not make a joke, like the conversation with Black Widow is like brutal. He's like, I'll kill him in front of you. And this is your mewling right. Quim. It's like, what are you, like, that's how evil he comes off in that movie. And then the very first scene of Loki 1, he's kind of joking in the Gobi Desert. I don't buy it. I like the Loki show, but that just triggered me into a larger conversation that I want to have right now, Robbie. Well, I'll let you react to that first because I know the knives are already coming out for me. So you say your piece.
So I do want to say to the people that are going to comment this, I mean, there are a couple of lines. I mean, there's the, you know, if it's all the same to you, I'll have that drink now. That's arguably a joke.
Okay,
but that's
more
kind of a quip than it is a joke, which I do think is different when you're looking in these movies. I think there's a difference between the kind of banter that you always have in superhero movies and the straight comedy that we get in like Thor Ragnarok and Guardians and Loki. And I think to me, the important thing, like whenever we reviewed Loki, I said that I thought the first and final episodes were pretty near perfect for me. And I also remember talking in that episode about this issue with the connectivity. And I think both of those can be true in that if you're looking at the show in general and even just this first episode, as long as we're talking about it, in a vacuum, in terms of, like, I always talked about how it sets up this premise, how it introduces a new tone. I think the comedy style that Michael Waldron brings is really refreshing and hilarious to me personally. And then there are really emotional moments. And it's really, really great as a first episode to a new series. As a continuation of the character's journey that began in the Avengers film, I think it has major, major issues. And I think those can be held separately, but I totally agree with you. I think that I just don't see how you get around that.
The actors themselves were super pumped to, quote, play a new version of Loki, right? Remember Tom Hiddleston talking about that, and there was so much emphasis put on that. And I was thinking to myself, well, it's just so drastic. How could have they fixed it? How could have they made it so that I buy his transition from Avengers Loki to Loki? How do I buy that transition? And I thought to myself, well, maybe if there was more time, like maybe if I had seen like 9 or 10 episodes of Loki, the show, and the first 3 episodes, he's still like really brooding and evil and slowly is broken down by Mobius, maybe. And then it just hit me. That's my whole thing with that show, is I had so much fun and it's funny and it was so cool and it was important and there was so much fun stuff with Loki, but did I need it? Because if I'm adding more time to it to make that character development more perfect, that's already what I got in the MCU. That's my whole thing. If you go back and rewatch the MCU, you see this growth in Loki already. He already had an arc. Like, his arc was so cool. He was the broody, evil person in Avengers. But then go watch Thor Dark World. You start to see him over time softening and becoming more mischievous and less just evil. You see him really hurt about his mother's death. You see him questioning things about himself. But then you still see him doing some trickery at the end. Then it makes so much sense why by the next time you see him in Ragnarok, he has now softened even more. He's jokier even more. He's kind of rebuilding a friendship with Thor and he's conflicted about his feelings, right? A little bit, but then he still is trying to, you know, win over the Grandmaster in Sakaar and he's still doing his mischievous thing, but it's definitely a softening towards Thor, which all leads to him finally fighting at Thor's side. I have chills. And then ultimately kind of dying for Thor and saying the line, we'll see each other again. And then he dies by Thanos. To me, that's a perfect arc. And now in hindsight, I just don't know that I needed more Loki from that show. That's crazy. I know. It sounds crazy because I think the show's well done. But
well, I
go back and watch those movies and you tell me that arc's not like really good.
No, I mean, I think an interesting, talking about, you know, the difference between viewing that as it's connected and viewing it kind of as a vacuum. Now that we've seen What If, there's even a part of me that's like, I wish that this were, I mean, it is a Loki variant, and that's part of how we get here. but I just almost wish that it didn't have to connect to Avengers in the way that it does, because that means now that we're supposed to be reading in what we know from Thor 1 Loki, what we know from Avengers Loki, and to some extent even what we know from beginning of Thor 2 Loki, right? Like, if we're saying this is kind of the version of this person at this point in time.
And people will say, well, and he got a chance to see his life on video.
But I would say, even, I think maybe Hiddleston would argue, and by the way, I'm not taking issue with the way he plays it. I think that by all accounts, Tom has done his homework and probably really tried to make this as smooth of a transition as possible. I think he was executing the material that was given to him. And as we've said, I think that it was probably a weird mix of like, okay, I want to make something new that's good, that works in its own right. And obviously it did. The show is a huge success. But also, you know, you get into the challenges of episodic storytelling where, you know, you've got to do that, but you're telling me that this is an extension of this thing. And I get that. I get it's sort of like asking Chris Hemsworth now to go back and play Thor 1 Thor after he's gotten to have all the fun he's had Ragnarok and forward. I think that would be a difficult thing for him to want to do. And I think that would probably be a difficult thing for him to even like backtrack to now that he's so settled into a certain version of the character. But all that aside, I think that even if you just take Loki in episode one before he ever goes into the room with Mobius, like everything that, because at that point, I'm if you want to say, well, no, see, he sees all this play out, he has this breakthrough, and then he starts changing, then I can buy that. We can have a discussion about how quickly that happens and how believable that is. But there's no reason why he should be acting so differently in the opening scenes, especially before the TVA. Like, I think the Gobi Desert scene is so informative there, because if you're talking about, I could see people saying, well, he's sort of using these defense mechanisms because he's out of his depth with the TVA, and so he's sort of using humor to kind of rebut them and to kind of protect himself from what he doesn't understand. But I think that also doesn't apply if we're looking at that exact scene in the Gobi Desert when he's already a little goofier. And I just don't understand that, because he's supposed to be, I mean, moments after we see him in Avengers when he's very much the kind of version of Loki that you were just describing throughout that entire movie.
I think looking at his character from the Avengers to Loki is just a microcosm of what I want to caution the MCU about, which is that anytime you start dealing with this multiverse and other realities and variants, that can just become, in my opinion, like a like how the writers of Endgame said that time travel can be a trope that they need to be careful with. Mm-hmm. And we're opening a phase where by nature the temptation is going to be to let things get a little bit looser, a little less tight of a grip on the details. And so like, if something's ever messy, you can just say it's an alternate reality. It's a variant, right? You could just say that stuff. And I feel like we lose the nature of the tightness of it. So like, when I look at that show in particular, the ending was so phenomenal, and like how it opened up the multiverse and so shocking. And we praise the show for so many things. I love the show, including how the last episode was dialogue heavy and we loved all that. So I'm not saying the show wasn't doing a good job, but in a way, when I zoom out, I think the reason I like WandaVision more is because Loki already had an arc. So in general, the show on the Loki front as a character didn't feel that necessary. Wanda and Vision, we had not really gotten a chance to see them together at all. We saw them in Infinity War for a quick glimpse. But right, to get more Rogue One work there, where they go back and add stuff, really added to it. So in some ways, I think those shows are opposite, where Loki got the greater MCU impact, correct? That's why it's such a big deal. But it missed on some of these little details, like I'm talking about with Tom Hiddleston. And yet, WandaVision had almost no greater MCU impact, But every little interaction and detail I bought. It made sense with the characters in the MCU, and we moved those characters forward.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And I think that, you know, to the degree that you were supposed to be slotting those characters into certain moments, like in episode 8, I don't feel like there were any continuity issues to my eyes. And I only say that because I feel like I'm a little bit, maybe I'm too harsh or looking too closely for those things just because I want it all to fit so well. I mean, I think the same thing when I'm watching Black Widow, which I also think they did a really good job of trying to make sure, okay, is this the version of this character that should have existed at this point in time where you're telling me this takes place? And yeah, I think in both of those projects, they're doing similar things. And I'm not feeling this level of kind of discomfort, you know?
Right. So that leads me perfectly into a what's new in the MCU segment here. And partially what's new in the MCU is Robbie and I are trying to figure out what is the MCU, because there's a new Venom movie coming out in October. And Robbie and I will avoid spoilers here. We ourselves have not seen this movie and we have not seen the post-credit scene, but we have heard that the post-credit scene is a bombshell. And in the most recent trailer of Venom 2, it says the universe is expanding, and then Venom swats away kind of a spider. So, you know, use your imagination what that means. But because of that, in preparation, holy crap, you and I are now going to have to catch up on so much content. So we've kind of committed, right, to watching Venom, covering Venom, to watching the old Spider-Mans and talking about those. So here we go. Buckle up. I don't know what the next phase looks like, but Robbie and I are going to be here for it. So,
which is a perfect lead into, I mean, if we're talking about what's new in the MCU, we should talk about what's new in the FFW world.
true.
And here, we've sort of been hinting towards a new stage at Friends from Work, and we're excited to finally be kind of on the brink of unveiling that here. And here's what I mean. We have so much content coming here over the next couple months. This is actually, even though we have a show coming every week, that we had a movie premiere at the start of September and another one premiering at the start of November, this is actually, I think, the lightest on content that we're going to be for a while, which is saying something. And right. So in light of all that, Kyle and I have been trying to figure out the best way to address everything that we want to cover, as well as some of the kind of extra fun stuff that we've always liked to bring that we just don't always have time to do. And what we have decided is that we are now going to be bringing you guys the main Friends from Work show that will be unchanged. It will be everything that you've loved about Friends from Work, nothing subtracted from that, if anything, more added to that. However, there will also be some Friends from Work bonus content, which you can subscribe to if you're so inclined.
We're still figuring out the details of when that's going to launch and how it's going to launch and what it's going to look like. But yeah, I'm pretty pumped about it.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that more in the weeks to come. But the reason we talk about it here is we've got a lot of fun plans when it comes to Spider-Man, in that we're going to dive into the Spider-Man kind of cinematic past. We're going to dive into the Spider-Man comics past. We're going to do some deep digging into what we think we can expect from No Way Home. And like I said, some of that you will find on the main feed, but there's going to be a lot more to go into if you come over to the Friends from Work bonus feed. And
right,
like we said, we'll be giving you guys the details for that, but that's coming very, very soon. So be on the lookout and know that if you're looking for something to scratch your Spider-Man itch here in the meantime, we will have you covered.
I hinted at it on Slack, and a lot of people were asking, you know, what are the details of that? What does it mean? Like I said, we're still working out some of those. But just to give you kind of a picture, to reiterate what Robbie said, I don't want anyone to feel like we are lessening the free product of Friends from Work. In fact, it's going to be probably growing. We'll probably do more episodes on the main episode, but there is just so many conversations we could have around some of these movies that as of now aren't canon and stuff like that, that we want to have, but Robbie and I just with our lives don't have time to do 20 episodes a week. So for example, an idea Robbie and I are having is that on our main feed, we are going to cover the original Spider-Man trilogy from a bird's eye view as one episode and kind of just talk about what that could look like in the MCU. Then we'll do another episode in the main feed about The Amazing Spider-Man and those two movies and what that could look like. But we're thinking then, if you're really into that kind of stuff, if you subscribe to our bonus content, you could get an episode where we dive into each individual movie. So five bonus episodes where we go through it like it's a normal review. That's an example of how it's extra content. Or, for example, if you like some of the music discussions we've had, we've recorded an episode where we go through in a lot of detail some of the music from the MCU, even more than you've gotten. So it's just kind of stuff like that. Plus, we're debating some other perks and things like that. Because if you're paying to get extra content from Friends from Work, we want you to feel like you're getting your fill. And if you don't want to pay for it, we want you to feel like that's totally fine and you're still getting the Friends from Work you love.
Absolutely. And there is a ton of fun stuff that this is allowing us to do. So I think it is really important to know that this is in no way us shifting anything over that's ever existed somewhere else. It's just allowing us to come up with a bunch of new fun stuff, some of which y'all have asked for kind of all along the way.
Right. If it's not deemed bonus, we won't put it behind a paywall. Like, interviews are not going to now cost money. Like, we're going to be adding to our main podcast, not subtracting. So this is strictly conversations that we will not get to on the main pod because we just don't have time. But again, let's just tease it there because we're not announcing a start date. We don't know yet. That's just something we're flirting with as we ramp into Spider-Man and all of this stinking content.
Man, what we do know about, and I think something that we've taken our sweet time winding up to, is this latest episode of What If, Kyle.
Yep.
So let's jump into it. This episode is called What If Thor Was an Only Child? Which is interesting there because in the past they've used subjunctive mood there and there they're using not subjunctive mood. Anyway, so this episode is written by the one and only A.C. Bradley. As always, it's directed by Brian Andrews. We have a pretty crazy collection of returning live action performers in this episode. Most notably, we have Chris Hemsworth here as Thor. We have Natalie Portman making her first official MCU return since 2013's Thor the Dark World, which is kind of crazy.
That gets me really excited, actually. I don't know what it is, but I'm just obsessed with this idea that the culture of the MCU is so great that people eventually want to come back.
Right,
and
right.
So whether you love how she played Jane Foster or not, I'm really excited to have her back in the fold.
And to those out there that are going to nitpick and say, no, she technically appeared in Endgame, I will also nitpick and say that was footage reused from Thor the Dark World. So this is the first new performance we've gotten from her since then.
I love that I can just give hot takes and you can kind of cover my backside on everything. Appreciate that.
We then have Tom Hiddleston showing up again as Loki, Kat Dennings as Darcy, Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, Jeff Goldblum talking about people that are willing to come back for just a little bit. Kobe Smulders, Clark Gregg, Frank Grillo as Brock Rumlow, Taika Waititi as Korg, Karen Gillan as Nebula, Jamie Alexander as Lady Sif, Seth Green is again back as Howard the Duck, Rachel Howes as Topaz, which is still one of the funnier minor characters in the MCU. To me, Clancy Brown showing up again as Surtur. And then we also have a couple of folks and some decently large roles that were voiced by different actors. Here, most notably, we have Alexandra Daniels as Carol Danvers / Captain Marvel. We have Josette Ailes as Frigga. David Chin as Hogan. Fred Tatasciore, I'm probably saying that incorrectly, and Max Middleman as Fandral. So I think that is our cast of creators here. And let's dive in. What'd you think about this episode, Kyle?
Really fun to hear Natalie Portman and Chris Hemsworth and Kat Dennings specifically all back again. Love that. You know, I love that. I just want to say this really quickly. I'm a very excitable, passionate person. The reason we started this podcast is because the Infinity Saga made me so juiced up. I was just so excited about it that I wanted to talk to someone about it. And it still holds such a special place in my heart. But I've always wondered what would happen when I'm not totally into something going forward. Because with the Infinity Saga, we already had it, right? I already knew it's going to be no problem for me to get ramped up talking about the movies, Robbie, you know?
There were no question marks, really.
Right, exactly. And I think What If has been a fun show, and it's done a good job of doing what it's doing. And I love the dark nature of a lot of the episodes and these quick little glimpses into fun twists on the stories we know and love. But in general, I just got to say, I feel like I'd lose credibility if I don't admit that this show has not been entirely my thing. It's been harder for me to get really ramped up about it. Which has caused me to feel weird at times because I want to add joy to the MCU for our listeners. Like that's what I feel like we do so well. And so I never want to rain on someone's parade if you're super, super into the show. But this show, I don't know if it's the animated nature. I don't know if it's the multiverse, like no MCU consequence kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I just haven't felt it as much. And this episode would be towards the bottom of that. Like, whereas like Doctor Strange, I still felt and really enjoyed.
Right.
This one would be towards the bottom for me. Tell me why I'm crazy. I just don't want to lie to our listeners. You know what I mean? Like it's not been totally my scene, and I'm very excited to get to the Eternals and Hawkeye personally.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And I don't think I'm far off. I mean, the ones that I have ranked the highest are the darkest ones. And I think in some ways that's because I feel like they're doing things that the MCU has not felt like it could do. And doing them well. And I think those things feel like they have consequences, if only internally, that I kind of care about. You know, like even if we never see that version of Doctor Strange again, I still felt like it was almost like, you know, some of these like Pixar shorts that come out that are 20 minutes that just sit with you because it's just a contained story that's really moving. That's how I felt about that episode. And then there were things about like the zombie episode and about last week's episode that I thought were just so well done that I really felt like they kind of informed elements of the MCU that I care about. And so I think, but again, both of those were on the darker side.
Those are really good points. And I agree with that. That's a good point.
But yeah, you know, I think if you look at my rankings of these episodes or working rankings that I've been putting out there, I am just not connecting with the kind of lighter-hearted, fun installments as much. And I don't mean that to say that I'm like super dour. I'm the Captain America, the First Avenger guy. It's not like I'm out here wanting a lot of gritty real-world stuff. But I just, it's not really ringing any bells for me because I think, like I'm saying, I want these, like what I like about What If is when it goes somewhere that I've always wanted the MCU to go and it hasn't. I think the MCU has done a fine job with comedy. I think everyone would say, if anything, I mean, critics would say the MCU maybe is too jokey at times. I don't think that necessarily, but that's kind of the more common critique, not that it needs to be funnier or lighter, you know? And so I've never really asked for something, even the Chadwick episode to me is buoyed by Chadwick's performance and some of the themes there and some of the commentary on T'Challa as a character I really appreciated. But in general, that episode just intrigued me a little bit less because of the tone of it. Like I like the reason I think I liked episode 3 a little bit more than episode 2 was I just feel like it dove into that, I guess, darkness that maybe I've been craving, even if I didn't No, I was craving it. So all that to say, yeah, I'm with you in that I think there were a lot of things that I thought were really fun about this week's episode. But in general, this would probably be either at the bottom or near the bottom of my list of What If episodes so far.
And I don't think anything we're saying is that revolutionary. Like, the numbers have bared out that the casual movie fan was able to get into shows like WandaVision and Loki, but they've had a harder time jumping into shows like What If. We've even heard that feedback on our Slack. So I don't think those feelings that we're saying are inappropriate in any way. And then I also want to say it's kind of almost unfair of me to maybe even have expectations that it will be anything different than that, because that'd be like saying, you know, putting pressure on a show, an animated show like Clone Wars, getting the same kind of numbers and pull as the Star Wars movies, right? Like it's not the same thing. There's going to be casual people that don't get into it, and there's going to be diehards that will get into it. So I get that's just the nature of the show we're in. I've enjoyed it for what it is. That doesn't mean I'm not excited for diving back into Hawkeye and Spider-Man, you know?
right. Well, let's do a little throwback here. And, you know, I think sometimes these episodes, they are all so different in format. Sometimes I think they lend themselves, when they're very plot heavy, to a more kind of scene by scene analysis. This one, I think, maybe lends itself more to a classic, you know, what works, what doesn't work. Analysis. Okay. So if you're down, let's kind of tackle it that way.
Okay. I can start. I thought it was really fun to see Loki as a frost giant and have a relationship with Thor that just is totally bro and it works and they're fun together. I thought
it's
that was
funny
a really
how
fun
like they have a better relationship when they're not brothers.
Right. Exactly. Brother from another mother. But I thought that was kind of cool.
Right. Yeah. I thought that was a fun little twist. And I also thought that Chris Hemsworth and Natalie Portman did a really good job here. I mean, Chris Hemsworth was clearly having fun doing the kind of comedic Thor stuff that he's gotten really good at. And I think if I had any issues there, which, you know, I'm talking about it here, so it's clearly not something that didn't work. It's just, I'm still not quite sure. I don't know where the disconnect is, but it's like if I close my eyes, the performance is working, and then I open them, and I'm like, I'm not sure that the animation is always nailing the vibe that the voice actors are putting out, or nailing the look of the character that I want, and it works better with some characters than others. I'm just not I don't know. I think it's in part probably because of the tone, but I think the version of Thor that we've gotten in this episode and even in episode 3, which was a lot darker in tone, it's just a little too cartoony for me. I think like it's hard for me to make that be the Thor that we've known in the MCU. Does that make sense?
Yeah. One of our listeners on Instagram at the FFW podcast pointed out earlier in the series that it seems like maybe they're doing some of the animation first and then the voiceover versus getting the voiceover and then animating it. And whatever it is, or if it's the other way around, maybe there's just some disconnect in the animation and the voice. But that, for the most part, didn't bother me here. So just continue with things I like. I thought some of the humor worked. A lot of it didn't, but there was still some parts that were pretty funny to me. Specifically, I love seeing Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster back. I thought his lines just make me laugh when he was riding the like scooter thing.
Right.
And we're keeping the scoots, he says. That got me. I thought that was pretty funny and fitting for his character. And I thought, like, in the background when Thor says, oh, look, there's a rabbit in the sink.
Yeah.
Oh, so cute little rabbit. I thought that was pretty funny. And then my favorite line of the whole episode, I think, was how Nick Fury gets injured is Taika Waititi's one line. And I don't know if you caught what Korg says. He yells, ball cannon, instead of cannonball, as he jumps into the water.
That's funny.
Which I love.
I didn't catch that.
So I thought there was some humor that worked. I do think there was some that didn't work. But yeah.
I agree. I thought that Chris Hemsworth's delivery of a lot of those lines took lines that I thought were fine and made them funnier, just the way he said certain things. And I mean, I loved, like, even at the very end when he's talking about taking Jane on a date on the unicorn planet, and he's like, everyone's unicorn, even the waiters are unicorns.
Yeah.
Just stuff that's like, we talked about this with Andy Park. Like, I think one of the greatest discoveries of the MCU is Chris Hemsworth's comedic abilities and his timing and general sensibilities there. And so I think those are put to great effect in this episode.
I think another thing that works with the entire show is it's just so fun to get all the Easter eggs and cameos. Like, that's been my favorite part. Mm-hmm. So to see twists on the original story is cool. To see Jeff Goldblum show back up, to get a Korg line, to see Nebula again, to see Surtur again. You know, obviously this was like the Easter egg heaven with how many people can we bring in here?
For sure.
And that's been a fun part of the show for me.
Well, and even the Easter egg of, I mean, we've talked about how Laura Cartman has worked in different themes, and I like how she used a lot of the Sakaar stuff here to kind of fit the Thor party vibe. And I, you know, talking about something that's way more than an Easter egg, I actually thought it was really fun to see the Thor Captain Marvel battles here, because I feel like that's been a question floating around ever since Captain Marvel made her appearance, is kind of how she stacks up against Thor, because we really haven't gotten that moment. We haven't even necessarily gotten them fighting full power with each other to kind of see the side by side. And
yeah, but you cannot weigh the power levels of this versus the normal universe we're used to. You just can't.
Well, I'm not going into power levels. I'm letting that be your territory. I'm just saying, I think it's...
Get careful.
I think it can have some bearing. And I think...
Well, we've never seen Thor hit Captain Marvel into space to another continent. Right, well, that's where it's like, this is clearly a fun animated...
Well, but I think... That, well, that's what I mean, though. I don't think it's supposed to necessarily be a, okay, are they strong enough to hit someone to another continent? And I think more the idea is that they're relatively... evenly matched.
Similar. Yeah, sure.
Like, that's, okay. I think, the vibe you're supposed to get. You know, it's sort of like the kind of Hulk-Thor battles you've gotten, where it's like there's never a clear winner, mm-hmm. you know, because there's always some kind of mitigating circumstance here. And I just thought it was kind of, it was fun. There's one thing I'll say about that whenever we get to the what didn't work for me section, but I'll save that.
I enjoyed the person who played Captain Marvel. And I enjoyed... For me, the entire aura of Captain Marvel in this episode. How crazy is that? How controversial is that for your boy?
Wow.
I really did.
So that, how much more do you have on your what works list? Because that might transition me into my what doesn't work list.
That's about it.
Okay.
Go ahead. Are we going to have an episode where Kyle likes Captain Marvel and Robbie has to argue it? Is that
a
thing?
Maybe. Yes and no, because what I'm going to say is I agree. I like the writing for Captain Marvel. I like the general persona. I like the way she interacts with the other characters. I really missed Brie Larson here. Like, I felt like I wanted to hear her delivering these lines in a way that, like, because some of the stuff that you and I have always asked for from Captain Marvel, I feel like we kind of got here. And I mm-hmm. wanted it from Brie Larson. Like, I wanted to hear it come from the version of Captain Marvel that I know, even if it's, you know, a variant, yada, yada, yada. And this is to say nothing about the quality of Alexandra Daniels' performance here, because I think she did a great job, and you're right. That was just like, I feel like in some of these episodes, I've been like, well, yeah, you know, I wish I had the actor, but I don't think it's really taking away in a huge way. And for whatever reason... This is just one where I was like, man, yeah, I miss my girl Brie.
I think that's fair. I think I was responding more about the character and less about the voice actor specifically that I enjoyed. But you're probably right that it actually would do my soul good probably to hear Brie Larson delivering these lines, because I'm already liking the aura. It probably mm-hmm. would actually subtly influence how I view her next movie. You know what I mean? That I would have a positive experience with how Captain Marvel sits in the MCU.
Yeah. No, I was thinking
this makes it
that.
Sound like I'm in therapy. Like, I hate her. That's not the case.
No, it is. But yeah, it is nice, I really though. Enjoyed it. It's just nice to see. It's another one of those things we've talked about, like when we talk about the consequence of the timing with Captain Marvel and why we moved it to where we did in our watch order. But even then, you know, with it coming out in 2019, we just haven't gotten a ton of time with Captain Marvel where she's kind of out and about and not in the middle of like a... I mean, she comes in for these crisis moments in Endgame, and we just don't get a lot in the way of character there. But it's just really refreshing to get to see that character breathe some and to kind of get to know at least this version of her and her talk about Goose. And, you know, it's just like a... I would be... It does kind of make me excited for what the next Captain Marvel film could be. as did her appearance in Shang-Chi.
And I think everything else worked, except I would just say the general nature of the show, to piggyback off what you said originally, I think is where I was at, where it's like, for some reason, the darkness is easier for me to go down those rabbit holes of what would happen if this went really dark. And then I leave the episode feeling like I learned some life lesson about the character in the main MCU timeline that I didn't know. And I just don't know that that works as well when you're just having a jokey comedy party episode. I don't know that I learned anything about Thor that I didn't know, right? Like, we've already seen kind of the arrogant Thor. So it wouldn't have been that crazy to think that at some point he would party and stuff. You know, I just don't know that it enhanced my viewing of any of the main characters because of the nature of the episode. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can't take much from it.
Well, it's interesting how this kind of relates back to what we were saying and will kind of have me transition to my last point here. To what we were saying about Loki and the kind of tone of that and Chris Hemsworth's progression, one thing the show just makes me aware of is how important it is, no matter how funny Thor gets, that always needs to be balanced out in equal measure by the weight of whatever situation he's in, like whatever kind of emotional gravitas is being brought to that particular film. Because it's like, if you think about Ragnarok is so funny, but Ragnarok is also the film where he loses Mjolnir. He loses his father. He loses all of Asgard, you know? And then Infinity War, he's very funny. But then, you know, we've gone over all that at length. And I just think it's really important to have those go hand in hand. And I think, as much as I think the Chris Hemsworth stuff works here and it is funny, I just find myself not caring very much.
Yeah, you're a genius. I didn't think of it that way, but that's why I have you. Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Which I think that's one of the reasons I'm so happy that Taika is sticking with the character, because I think if you've seen any of Taika Waititi's work, with the possible exception of What We Do in the Shadows, he always tends to kind of back up the comedy with an emotional core. And
do you get nervous about that at all or not? 100% on board. Like, I think he's a genius. What he did with Ragnarok, what he did with Jojo Rabbit, which was one of my favorite movies of that year, is unbelievable. But his whole point, even talking with Andy Park last week, was we're going to shake Thor up and we're going to do it totally differently. And now all I'm hearing is this is even crazier and zanier.
Right.
Do you think there's a level where it just doesn't work or not?
No, I am nervous about it, I should say. But I think the reason I brought up the Taika thing is I haven't seen any evidence so far in terms of the stuff he's been putting out in recent years that he's trying to move away from the darkness. I think Jojo Rabbit's a perfect example. You know, I mean, that movie is so silly at times, but it's dealing with, you know, very dark themes. And so I think based on the character that they're bringing in as the villain, I mean, Gore the God Butcher in the Thor comics by Jason Aaron is one of the kind of darker Thor villains. It's a villain that actually gets in, it creates a sort of identity crisis for Thor that's different even than the kind of stuff we've seen. And I think we've talked about how they can work through that in a way that isn't kind of playing the hits. And I think that I know it's not going to mirror that, but it's giving, like, I don't think they would pick that villain if Taika didn't want to explore some kind of still darker, weightier issues here in terms of what a deity even means in this universe, like what being a god means in this universe. So I think it'll balance out.
And I don't think they would choose Christian Bale.
Christian Bale would sign on.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I don't think Kevin would allow it if Taika went so far that it was hurting the MCU, really, is what I kind of land on.
Right.
Like, Taika still, even as much as he wants to flip Thor on his head and rewrite how Thor is told and stuff, he's still really involved in the MCU. Like, he comes back for this stuff. He's also involved in other nerd projects like Star Wars and stuff like that. So I still think he loves the MCU and what it's doing, right? Just he wanted to reinvent this character.
Right.
I guess I'm saying that's my argument too. I don't think he'll go even crazier just to shake things up again, just cause.
Right. No, I agree. But, you know, I'm nervous before every new MCU thing, especially when it's dealing with characters that I care about. You know, I'm always like, I'm going to be nervous for No Way Home. I'm going to be nervous for Doctor Strange too. Like anytime, because when I'm such a fan of how something's been handled, I'm always nervous that the ball is going to be dropped, whether there's any basis for that at all. I do think, though, talking about the importance of kind of balancing out the light with the dark, one of the more interesting parts of this whole episode is the very final 10, 15 seconds where we see the first appearance in show of this Vision Ultron with the Infinity Stones character
mashup
that has been teased kind of since the very beginning with these promos. And I know some folks are thinking is going to be the kind of ultimate big bad if we do have some kind of Guardians of the Multiverse team up here. I thought that was fun. I didn't expect that to come in this way in this episode, because every other kind of stinger we've had at the end of these has always been related more directly to the events of the episode. But here it looks as though he's either coming from another timeline, or this is just the start of a whole new chapter that has nothing to do with the Party Thor stuff.
Right. And the Watcher was confused by it. That's important, I think, because he was like, wait, what's this? What? So is
that's
this
true? That's a great
creature
point.
Able to bypass the Watcher's viewing and go in between these timelines, multiverses? Like, yeah, something. And the second thing is, as I was looking at it, I was like, what am I looking at? I was so confused. I had to like pause it. I'm like, is that Vision? Is it Ultron? Wait, he has stones? Wait, it was very trippy what I was looking at.
Do you think this is just going to be essentially the Avengers don't stop Ultron from inhabiting the Vision body that he's trying to inhabit in Age of Ultron, and then he achieves a level of power to where he's able to now go and collect the stones? Is that's sort of what I'm assuming.
That makes sense, because it'd be Ultron kind of in a vibranium body with stones. So,
right. I mean, it would be all the power that Vision has plus the kind of lack of restraint that Ultron would have.
Yeah. I don't know. There's two episodes left. So do they resolve that in two episodes? I don't know. It could be a season two thing.
Oh, true. True. Which I'm cool with. I'm always down for the long game.
Well, and just to reiterate, speaking of the long game, Robbie and I have the long game in mind with this potential announcement of the bonus content. So be thinking about that. Be guarding your heart, find out if you want to do it, and we'll give you more details as we get a little bit closer. But as always, thank you so much to all you guys for even making that possible. Don't forget to like, rate, review, subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and check out our website, which we are constantly updating, the ffwpodcast.com. Follow us on social media at the FFW Podcast. And most importantly, keep listening and share the Friends from Work podcast with all of your friends, with all your family, anyone who you think might enjoy the MCU. And so we got a ton coming up. We'll see you next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.